I'm Louise DiLullo, Chief Client Officer here at Advertising Week.
And I'm Ruth Mortimer, Global President at Advertising Week.
You're listening to the Future is Female podcast from Advertising Week in partnership with LinkedIn.
Each week on the Future is Female podcast, we'll be speaking to female leaders from across the industry.
These exceptional leaders, fearless visionaries, and trailblazing executives share their stories and offer advice to all women in the workplace, regardless of seniority.
Thank you for joining us, and please consider subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon, or your podcast platform of choice.
Today on the Future is Female podcast presented by LinkedIn, we are joined by Kathy McGee, co-founder, president, and CEO of Operation Smile, and Christy Picaro, chief of strategy and partnerships at Operation Smile. This amazing mother-daughter duo will tell us more about Operation Smile, their Women in Medicine initiative, and why Operation Smile is truly a locally led, globally driven family business. Kathy and Christy, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm so thrilled and honored to have you guys joining the podcast.
We're both so happy to be with you, really. Anything we can do to make the impact of Operation Smile stronger around the world, it's just kids that will be benefited. So Christy's been since, I think, age five, right, Chris? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Age six. So we're excited to be here and just to share a little bit of a piece of, you know, what we do and what this organization does to really change lives and families around the world.
Amazing. I'm so excited to hear about it. And with that, can you guys start a little bit by telling me about your careers, how you got where you are today? I would love to hear more about that.
For me, you know, I always wanted to take care of children. I mean, and I always wanted to go to Africa to do that. So it was just always a dream of mine, and then decided to go and get my degree in nursing, have some other degrees. But my focus always was children. So I worked pediatric nursing. I also worked inner city nursing, public health. So I've always been in that profession all my life. And we have five kids, and my husband's one of 12. So kids. It just worked out, because then when we were asked to go to the Philippines the first time, it was all about kids and their needs. So, you know, for me, it was the best thing that ever happened. And my husband was very, very focused on cleft lip and cleft palate and facial deformity with children. He always worked on children. So for us, it was a blessing and a gift, I have to say.
And for me, yes, I was 6 years old when Operation Smile started. I'm the youngest of the five. So I think I was always a part of just so many medical professionals and children who came into the United States to get care, more comprehensive care. But I will tell you now, 42 years later, really the impact was made on me in my life at about age 10. My parents brought all five of us to Manizales, Colombia, where we got to see firsthand what Operation Smile really was. And we were a part of the different surgeries that were being done. And I had the opportunity to play with some of the children that were having surgery. And, you know, as a 10-year-old, right, you just play and you really don't see any differences. And I remember being the last day of surgery, and my brother Trevor and I were sitting on the stairs and we started to cry. And my dad ran over and said, "What's wrong? What's wrong?" And we looked at him and said, "Who is going to take care of these children when we're not there?" And I do truly believe that that was the moment in my life where I really understood more about what Operation Smile did. But I knew that I wanted to be, you know, a part of it. So fast forward, I went on to nursing school. So, you know, I worked in the nursing profession, but I was kind of missing something. And I went on to consulting after that in the fundraising space in New York. And I loved all the different organizations that I raised money for, but I missed the story. I missed my story that I had told since I was 6 years old. So I was blessed to have a really amazing person who was the head of development who pushed my parents to say, look, your daughter has this experience. Why can't she come and tell the story? So I've been on board with Operation Smile now for 20 years, really mostly in the fundraising space, doing everything fundraising, and now sit in the role of chief strategy officer, overseeing the strategic growth of the organization across all different divisions, working in collaboration with other executive leaders, and then also oversee marketing, comms, as well as fundraising for Operation Smile, and really wake up every day excited and motivated by what I remember seeing even as a 10-year-old.
And I would just add to that, because we had patients live in our house. So Christy was, I guess, around 6 when the first patient came. And she was always engaged with them. Like, they're not speaking English. Hell, I'm going to teach you this poem. Repeat after me. And so they had, you know, she got very involved with our patients. And we had to teach them how to do different things in the bathroom. They've never seen a bathroom. So we had quite a few patients come through. And I highly encourage to get your kids involved early on, because this world is full of needs and they can be helpful in the future, as you hear from her.
Wow, I have to tell you that I had full body chills and got choked up a little. That is such an amazing story to have you on the show. As I said, very humbling. So thank you. So switching gears a little to get a little bit more into Operation Smile, and for those who might not be familiar that are listening, Kathy, can you tell us a little bit more about the story behind it? You mentioned 40 plus years. That's such an unbelievable accomplishment. So we'd love to hear a little bit more about that.
Actually, my husband was invited by a partner of his who had been to the Philippines. And he said, you know what? Your focus is cleft lip and cleft palate. I think you should go this year to the Philippines and work with this team. It was a team of 14. And the other group came from Texas, and we joined them. And he said, you need to go. And I was like, we have 5 children at home. I don't think I can leave. And he goes, no, you need to do this. So my parents came in and off we went. And I'll tell you what, it opened our eyes, because we had never, ever seen so many children with cleft lip and cleft palates. They're everywhere in the Philippines. We know now we're working in Cebu to put a center together, and there are 40,000 kids with clefts right around the Visay Islands. So we've got our work cut out for us. From the very beginning, we saw so many children and said we would try to provide anything we can to have those children have a life, because they're not eating, they don't speak, and they have a facial deformity. So we know those children are made fun of every day. We know it there and we know it here. So for us, there was the focus. And the last site we were in, we kind of traveled around the islands, and there were 300 kids with cleft lip and cleft palate standing in front of us with the parents. So overwhelming with 14 of us. And you know, almost like we're tearing up saying, there's no way. And interesting enough, as I said, get your kids involved. We happened to take my oldest daughter at that time, and I had no idea what was going to happen. So I taught her how to scrub as a scrub nurse in the United States hospital before we left. So my husband goes, put her on, get another table. Let's put her on as a scrub nurse. And I was like, all right, okay. And she actually was phenomenal, because there's only so many instruments, but she figured them out. She handed him the instruments. And so we were able to do 40 children that time. So we knew we left so many. And that was our initiative, to go back and finish just those kids. And here we are 42 years later. Yeah.
And if I could just jump in, I think too, you know, what my mom said is, Operation Smile was always built on relationships and trust and passion. And I think even if you look at when Operation Smile, you know, began, we always sought to address the massive need. And I'm not sure if you're aware, but there are 5 billion people that lack access to safe, affordable surgery around the world. And what we see at Operation Smile is there are 7 million people around the world that lack access for cleft conditions for surgery. But in the 36 countries where we work, there's about 5 million patients that we're trying to get to. So for us, it is about utilizing those relationships that we formed even, you know, 42 years ago, but then building on that for the future as we look at educating and training and providing that education to safe surgery so that we can continue to get to those children that lack access.
Those are some startling and shocking stats, and thank you for sharing them. Coming away from that, the thing that sticks out to me the most is this truly started as a family trying to help other families and has kind of maintained a family business feel. I'm very familiar with Operation Smile, and I never knew that it was so family-based, which I, coming from a big family who I'm very close with, happen to love. Now I love even more what you guys do. So I think a lot of listeners probably didn't know that, but starting out as a family business and kind of maintaining that throughout the years, how does it feel now to have your daughter leading the organization's strategy and working alongside you, Kathy? And then Christy, I'd love to hear, you know, working alongside your mom and learning from her, you know, how's that been?
You know, we all have different styles of how we do things, but we, both of us, get the job done. And I think for myself, you know, I get up every morning and say, all right, how am I going to do more kids today? And then Christy's very much on top of knowing that and seeing what funding is needed, the impact we made. We're very resilient in here. You know, during COVID, we didn't stop at all, and neither did our countries. And talking about family, our countries are like family to us. We have them here. We have them all in our house. We just had 80 from 26 countries. So we always treat each other as family. So I think that's one of the things that as we grew up as a family, we felt strongly that these countries should feel like family when they come here, when we go there. And so we're all pretty tight around the world.
And I would just say, you know, I think it's a privilege to work with your parents every single day. If you could witness, you know, what my mom does, it's pretty remarkable. You know, I think the aha moment for me was during the pandemic when we really, you know, my mom was used to traveling a lot and she would wake up every single morning staring at a picture of a before and after. And she really was driven by these children and these families. But we had a chance to kind of step back and ask them, what do they want for the future? And my mom said, I want to take care of more kids. It's really important, right? I told you that there were 5 million patients out there waiting for us. So we want to do more. And my dad said, the child with the cleft has led us back to the community to show us the need and get us to pay attention to the health system. His drive has always been in educating and training more medical professionals, because what we hear over and over again is stories of our patients and families who have to walk the long journey into the bigger cities, but unfortunately, due to cold or, you know, different reasons, they get turned away. And so for us as an organization, as we look to the future, which excites me under my parents' leadership, is to bring care closer into those communities where our patients live, but making sure that we elevate the health system and that hospital within that community so safe care and quality care can be provided. So, you know, we're excited. I think this organization, yes, is unique. I don't think we ever don't want to be a family. I think we know that we can grow and evolve and change, but this family feeling is very unique in the nonprofit space, and it makes us a little bit different, which is really cool to still run and, like my mom said, still have family out there in the foundations where we work.
And I will just say that when we looked at the situation, like, you can go in, bring your equipment, and leave. Okay, so that just didn't fly with us. So we're like, no. We have to train people up so they can continue. We'll have to get them some equipment so they can continue. I mean, we could train, but without equipment, they're going nowhere. So we really started that way back. And then we were like, we will always treat those children as we treat our own in this country. So that means you follow through with speech and dental work and nutrition for these children. And how do you take care of your teeth? So important for them. We have dentists on every team. So we really did look at the comprehensive care, if you will, for these kids and the actually impact of keeping this on the ground and teaching the people that live there how to follow through. So, you know, we learned a lot along the way. And as Christy's saying, we change as we see the need or we hear from our people, hey, we need more. We need more of this or that, more equipment. And we make sure that equipment is fixed and usable. We have a biomed on each of those teams and in a lot of these countries. So we'll never run out of a battery. We will keep going.
Well, with every response that you two have given so far, I have teared up a bit. What you're doing is truly remarkable. And you've clearly created a proper global movement when you're leading change. And I'm sure across the course of the years of doing the work, you've had some real pinch me moments. And I'd also imagine a fair share of setbacks. Can you tell us a little bit, you know, highlight some of the success stories and milestones that you're particularly proud of, but then also share, you know, on the other side of setbacks, how do you guys stay motivated and resilient as those setbacks may come?
You know, as Christy said, we try to look at change. What do we need to do? How do we make it better? And so we have actually in the last couple of years have a couple of programs. And it wasn't easy to start because we do have volunteers. All our medical people are volunteers. And we said to them, the ones that were with us the longest, maybe sometimes some of them are 25 years, some of them 15 years. We went to them and said, would you be a champion? And we're like, what is a champion? We're like, someone who is going to commit to sticking with a country for 2 to 3 years while we train them. So they can go on without us. And everybody said yes. And so we have this champion program, which I feel like is one of the things moving us forward, because now we've networked our really professionals with professionals in country, and they're mentoring the young ones together. So that has been phenomenal for us. The other thing that we have done over the last couple of years is to have women in medicine. So we're like, how are we going to do this? 70% of the medical positions are held by women, but only 20% of them have leadership positions. We're like, well, we could actually work with the women, try to, you know, give them some classes, get them some scholarships, get them in leadership classes, and have them move on for the future because we need them. You heard the numbers. You can't treat 5 million people without medical teams behind that. And we're very thin on that around the world. The one thing that really did touch us, because we were training, and in Rwanda, we trained the first female surgeon ever in that country. So, you know, there are things that we move forward because we have to change going forward because the world is changing so quickly now.
And for me, I think the pinch me moment was really during the pandemic. I think because I got to read a lot of what my parents wrote, and really it was this tipping point, right? It was 42 years or 40 years at that time. This organization really was doing incredible things, but the world needed to know more about it. And so the pandemic, of course, I mean, you know, we hear stories and we had our own stories. It was a hard time for everyone. But for us, it showed resilience of our teams. It showed real compassion of our staff. I mean, we have stories of our team in Madagascar that went to the very rural areas to make sure that our patients had supplies and equipment to just be safe. It showed the compassion, like I said, of our staff, our partners, and we really were inspired by the impact that we were creating around the world. I also think the caring never stopped. So like my mom said, We never stopped during the pandemic. Surgeries were still happening. Comprehensive care was still happening. And so we really pushed ourselves. You talk about innovation and how do we drive things forward. We pushed ourselves to look ahead and co-create with our local teams, really a roadmap that could guide us and a strategy of pillars that could guide us for the future. So I always say that this organization is globally led, but locally run. So I think even in your message, it's important for people to understand that this organization has always been driven by our countries. We talk about it as gears, right? There's always the larger gear that's driving things, right? Driving the bigger strategy. But if those smaller gears aren't working with those larger gears, we can't move. And I think the pandemic was this pinch me moment for us to say, wow, we actually have everything that we need to move forward. We kind of just have to drive it from an overarching strategy. And that's where we are today and moving forward. So really excited and really proud of our staff, our volunteers, our teams, even our patients and our families who trust us every single day to do the work that we do.
Yeah, I think that was definitely a hard one for us. We're like, wait a minute. But our I have to say, it's not just us. We have all these people on the ground. We're in, what, 26 countries. 36. And they just wanted it. You know, they needed supplies. They didn't have masks. They didn't have anything. And they continued to operate through separating kids, making sure people have masks very safely. And they were able to continue. They were very creative. They stayed in touch with their patients. They would do speech virtually and have them sing. It was incredible what people thought of during the pandemic. There was no stopping for sure for us.
Well, Operation Smile is clearly changing the world. I think that that's almost become a term we throw around a lot, you know, especially in this media industry as we look towards the future. But it's apparent, and with you two at the helm, you know, you both changing for the better. And Kathy, you mentioned a little bit about women in medicine. Can you tell us a little bit more about what Women in Medicine is? And you talked about the first female surgeon in Rwanda, which is incredible. Can you tell us more about how that came about?
Well, we realized the statistics that there weren't enough women that were in a medical field, not enough women that had jobs out there. So we thought, wow, if we push this, then we can get them, you know, we need healthcare workers, we need everything in these countries. So we had a brainstorming. A big donor came to us and said, I will pay for this. And so we decided we'd start by going globally. So one in Morocco, one in Madagascar, another one was in Peru, and the last one was in the Philippines where we started. All women, surgeons, anesthesia, you name it, biomeds, there was all women running these programs. So it worked. So we know there's a need. And what we did was bring on other younger females to mentor them. And so we were able to get, you know, some of them scholarships and get them to drive to the future for us. But it's going to be a big piece. And we're just looking at where do we go next. We're putting on new other programs, just women. So they worked together really well. They, you know, kind of didn't stop. They love the kids. They understand the families. And it's been an eye-opener for us, actually, just thinking about it, but then, you know, really implementing. It's made a huge impact.
Yeah, and I look at it as just a couple of pillars. You know, educating women in low middle income countries in advanced medical specialties is really our drive, right? Mm-hmm. We talk about the big five at Operation Smile, the plastic surgeon, the nurse, the biomed tech, the anesthesiologist, and the pediatrician. And so if we can train more women in those different spaces, it could be hugely helpful. We talk about empowering women in low middle income countries to become leaders in global medicine is another pillar. Expanding opportunities for female healthcare workers to receive mentorship and elevating cleft care in high need countries. So those are the pillars that we're driving. But I think that there's such a cool story in Rwanda that just happened. So my mom mentioned that Francoise was the first ever plastic surgeon, you know, in a country of, I believe, about 16 million people. But the coolest part is we talk about it as a cohort that is being trained in this next generation. So there's a woman by the name of Dr. Vicky, who now Dr. Francoise will also train. So that's just an example of how this ripple effect of this kind of, you know, one of our strategic pillars is we're seeing it in action, right, in the countries where we work, which is also really cool because then we're living up to these pillars that we put in place, but we're actually seeing it in action.
What do you guys think is next for women in medicine? You know, as we look towards at least the next 12 months, you've created so much impact and so much change already. We'd love to hear a little bit about what the next kind of goals are.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is around medical for sure. But, you know, my mom spoke about my sister Bridget, you know, on a surgical program at a really young age. We actually have students that are engaged in what we do. We call it youth empowerment. So we have about 12,000 students around the world who start clubs at their schools. We also are now bringing over children thanks to companies like Align Technology, where they sponsor students from these low middle income countries, where they're able to come into our international student leadership conference. So I think it's about, you know, women in medicine, also around youth and these efforts that are really important, because if our next generation understands the work that we do and is inspired by the work that we do to go on to do greater things, then Operation Smile has done something to make this world a better place. So we also look at it as different initiatives that we have. We call it the hub and spoke model. So the hub is in the bigger city where we're training and educating our medical volunteers. But like I said, the spoke is out, hospital is out in the communities where we work. So if we can, as an organization under those pillars, start to engage more women around healthcare to take on leadership positions, you know, Operation Smile is also, you know, kind of one in terms of, you know, we've inspired people to make a difference.
Yeah, I think what Chrissy's saying is right, because I don't think people think about students, right? So we have students on all our teams, which we saw from our daughter that first trip. Wow, if everyone works as hard as she, why not put them on the trips? And they help us take care. Just if you're going to screen 200-300 kids, they're all standing around. Do not like to see a child standing around. So they do skits with them. How to take care of your teeth. What do you do if you're dehydrated? What do you do if you're burned? Stop, drop, and roll. So they have them very active while we're, you know, all gathered. So it's fun for the kids that we take care of, and it's fun for the students that we bring with us. So, yeah, we have thousands of kids, clubs everywhere now. Our kids from Virginia taught students from other states. Now it's, I just came back from Colombia, where we had just Latin students, because there's so many students out there now. And guess what? They come back to do things with us in their adult life, whether they become a profession in medicine or legal. It's amazing how many of them come back to help us move the future. So we didn't think of it that way, but we're certainly glad that we have had these students on our trips, and we train them, so they're not just random. They have jobs when they go with us, and they're part of the full medical team.
And they come back to the family, of course.
Yeah, that's right.
Exactly.
As we talk about students and children, it's natural then to, you know, think even more towards the future. And obviously, this podcast is titled "The Future is Female Podcast." So as we think towards the future, particularly from a, you know, women's perspective, how do you guys see women's careers in healthcare continuing to evolve, particularly on a global scale, as you obviously have a very unique view of it, given the 36 countries that you're in?
I truly believe that if we provide access, right, and outcomes, and we, you know, provide that training, then you're going to see women take on more roles in leadership. I think about it as decreasing gender biases, right? And cultivating these environments for women to rise. You know, we're two women. My mom always inspired us as young women to, you know, believe in something, be passionate about it, but don't be afraid. And so I think if there's more women out there that also are setting these standards and pushing women to believe in their self, we're going to see really the work that Operation Smile does change, but also really inspiring this next generation of women to really take on leadership roles for us as an organization, but also for other opportunities out there within their communities.
Yeah, and if you look at any sports, like Christy played soccer, I watched her on the field kind of pushing people around. You know, you've got to have some grit doing this. And I think that's one of the things we're really pushing with the females. Get some grit about you because we need you. These families need you and this world needs you, and you can do this. We have pushed it, but I say when I watch these women on these trips, they're strong. They're strong and they love these kids. So it was an aha for us for sure, but it will go on for the future with Operation Smile.
Absolutely. I think I've mentioned it before on this show, but I come from a long line of strong, independent women. So I have to feel it with you guys. That grit is there. It's deep inside all of us. And just even continue to look ahead. What is next for Operation Smile?
I mean, Christy spoke about the hub and the spoke. And I would just say this story. I cannot look at these families now. They come from everywhere and anywhere just to take care of their child. They'll walk, they'll get money, they'll go for days to get to us. And it's hard now to drag them all the way into a main city like Manila. So we need to get out where they live. You know, this one mother that I was looking at, and I look, you know, we look at them as we're screening, look them in the eyes. But if you look down, you see who they really are. They have no shoes on. It's raining. They have no raincoat. And you'd say to yourself, what in the world are we doing? So now we're headed out to these, as Christy said, spoke or district hospitals. They're much more rural, but that's where they live. So we're trying to go out where the people live, which within 70 miles, they'll have a hospital that we're going to get some good equipment in, better training in, so they don't have to come into a big city. So we're really pushing, I would say, for the future on that one.
Yeah, and I would just say after 42 years, our goal is that everyone with a cleft condition is our responsibility. And so for us, after, you know, seeing that, like my mom said, if we don't provide the care, there's no guarantee that anyone else will. So for us, it is our responsibility to not only be there for those patients and families, but then to provide the education and training to our medical professionals that we partner with in these hospitals. Because if we can provide the training, then Operation Smile is just a, you know, 360-day operation. The care is always there, but the training's there because quality has always been something that Operation Smile has valued. Mm-hmm. Yes, there are surgeons that can just perform cleft surgery, but is it the best, right? Mm-hmm. Is it the best surgery that they can provide? Because what we value is we treat every child like it's our child. We provide the care that we would provide to our own children. And that's something we're really proud of. It's not a numbers thing for us. It's about a multidisciplinary approach that we would get, you know, in our country. And we think that that same care should be provided to these communities and to these families.
Yeah, you know, we're not in and out. We're there. And our teams live there. And even most of them now have created comprehensive centers where these families know they can come back and get any of the care they need, whether it's dental, or speech. You know, speech is not done in a day. So they have to be able to come to someone who's going to work that speech up over some time. So everybody is really focused on making sure these kids get the right care so they can get back to school, so they can get jobs in the future. You know, it's great for the economy of this country. It all kind of winds up into that one child.
Statistics and everything else aside, but treating it that way, it is very apparent. That's why Operation Smile has been so powerful and so successful over the years. So Kathy and Christy, once again, kudos and thanks to you for all you're doing for the world.
We always say it's a team. We've got this team out there, you know, that they're ready to go at any moment. And you call resilience, they've got it. We say there is no word like no in this organization. Just figure out what's there and how you get it done. So
I am a firm believer in if someone tells you no, you've just simply asked the wrong person. So
that's a good point.
I'm with you on that. I have to be honest, I may have stole it from Kris Jenner, but it's pretty good work.
That's okay. We won't judge you.
All right. As we wrap, just one final thing, which we try to end all of our episodes on. What's one thing you'd like to leave our listeners with as they walk away from this episode?
I mean, we can't do it alone. Mm-hmm. The work that we do, we count on so many different people. I mean, I'm kind of blessed to be in the space of really working on partnerships. These global companies, these donors that support us are crucial. I love the fact that we do collaboration across, you know, all different sectors to support. We collaborate with NGOs, corporations. We collaborate with governments. Our volunteers are a big asset for what we do every single day. Like I said, students, you know, so we can't do it without people. So I always say, if you're inspired or touched by what we talked about today, please, we would love people to come and help us. We love new ideas. We're very innovative in our approach. And like my mom said, it is a team approach. We have incredible staff around the world and colleagues that drive it every single day. And it is locally led, globally driven. It is our foundations that really help us and drive the work that we do. So come join us and be a part of this bigger Operation Smile global family.
I think that is it. We always are encouraging people to join us. And as I said, the students get ideas and they, you know, they drive us all the time. So get your families involved, get your kids involved, because then dinner gets to be a conversation with everyone that's shared this. Christy just took her oldest son to Colombia and, you know, he's been part of clubs and he's seen children with cleft lip and cleft palates, but they went to a patient's house, but they had to walk through a river, very hot, very hot. Finally get to the house, I'll call it a house, but like a little hut. And I think Bowden was just like, really? Is this the way people live? And he actually, on his way back, because they were teaching speech and they were in the, you know, the home, and the family was there, so he got to be with all of that. And on the way back, he looked at Christy and he threw his arms around him. He's a 15-year-old. And he was like, Mom, I never knew people live like this. So it's very empowering for any of us to be part of these teams, to work with Operation Smile, because people do, I think 85% of the world lives the way Bowden saw it, without much. And they're not unhappy. They just need their children to be taken care of. So we encourage everyone to join us. We love ideas, and you never know where that is going. Whether it was Champions or Women in Medicine, these are new ideas that came out just last couple of years. So please join us.
Well, Kathy and Christy, thank you so much for joining us and for telling us your story and a little bit more about Operation Smile and Women in Medicine. And can't wait to see what's next for this locally led, globally driven family business. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us. If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider sharing it with a colleague and leaving us a review on your preferred podcast platform. We'll see you again in the next episode.